Welcome to the first official episode of Haunted Hills, Small Towns, Big Stories. This episode will share history, crimes, and ghosts of this place. If you recognise my voice, that's fantastic. I don't. I'm Tegan Dawson. I used to run tours in the Latrobe Valley area. This episode is an amalgamation of stories from the Yalore North Ghost Tour, Crime in the Brown Coal Mine Tour, along with heaps of other research I couldn't share in an hour and a half while everyone was standing around in the cold. It's always colder when the sun goes down. If you're interested in where the Haunted Hills are and more, you can check out the website hauntedhills.com.au. You can visit the Haunted Hills virtually or in real life. And who knows, it might feel like someone is there with you. Download a podcast and enjoy wherever you are, or if you have the nerve, listen on location. Where in the world are the Haunted Hills? Well, today they have a new name, but we'll get there by the end of this pod. It's an area today and was a township just off the Princess Highway, north towards Yalore, between Mowi and Morwell. The town was where Haunted Hills Road meets DeCampo Road. The Haunted Hills Township appears to have started around 1919, with people flocking to the area to commence trade and business in time for Yalore and the power station's development by 1921. Later, we meet Henry, who lived in the Haunted Hills in 1920. Towns were not gazetted until the post office was built. Haunted Hills Post Office was there in 1935, as listed on the telephone exchange, however may have been there as early as 1929. In 1928, there was not an established town noticeable from the people driving past towards Yalore, which makes sense because the bush was still very dense and people during this time lived in shanties and bush huts, made from inexpensive materials, but they owned those homes. Let's step back. Before colonization, even up until at least 1928, the Haunted Hills were covered in giants, giant ghost gums, giant eucalyptuses, huge hulking trees, monsters of a tree, you could say. And then there was brush all beneath it. Native hops was part of this. It was sprinkled in between those giants, blooming with red and yellow flowers. This is the country of the traditional custodians, the Gunai Kurnai people, who never ceded this land. The Gunai Kurnai knew this bush. They even found Gilleen, which translates in English to brown fire, their name for the coal which lays just beneath the topsoil. For as long as the Gunai Kurnai had managed this land, they knew about the rumbling, the reverberation that runs through the hills. In a radio interview with a local Aboriginal elder, who has since passed away, he said the old people determined the hills were a sacred place because of that rumbling they heard beneath them. While they hunted and gathered food from the hills, they would return home to their dwellings before dark to avoid being caught in the haunted hills with the spirits. The haunted hills were challenging to traverse. This slowed the growth of the area, partly because the bush was so thick and partly because of the name and reputation of the place. In fact, the rep was so strong it almost stopped the train line going through there. Another suggestion to avoid the haunted hills was to extend the South Gippsland train line from Port Albert to Sale. It was discussed at length in the Victorian Parliament in the late 1800s. The train trip from Melbourne via Port Albert to Sale would at best take 17 hours. Remember, we're talking about the 1800s technologies. And at worst, 24 hours. This was why the North Gippsland Railway was favoured, even though a concerned citizen wrote about the engineering challenges the train line would face in the Haunted Hills. But nonetheless, it was opened in 1878 with an inaugural trip leaving Oakley Station. A diversion using the Yalore-Mowi Railway to reduce the gradient of the Haunted Hills was discussed. The Yalore-Mowi Railway was put through in 1922 and did not divert the main Gippsland line. Today there is a walking trail that takes the path of the Yalore to Mowi Railway. As the engines became stronger, they were able to deal with the 1 in 0.50 gradients increased safety, reduced the incidents which occurred with high frequency since it opened. And I'm going to tell you about some of those incidences right now. In 1901, the train left Morwell travelling towards Melbourne, chugging up the eastern slope of the Haunted Hills, when Taylor, a young lad of mere 5 years, opened the carriage door and fell out. Or was he pulled by the mysterious forces that haunt the Haunted Hills? Either way, he was gone before his mother could react. He rolled down the hill, getting cuts and abrasions as he scraped along the rocks and brush, losing consciousness just shy of falling into the Morwell River. Thankfully, he survived and was recovered quickly enough because Roy, our hero for this story, walked along the train tracks. He reached the boy and gave him back to his mother. Medical assessments were organized, and then he was taken to the children's hospital because he was suffering partial paralysis and unconsciousness. There were some incidences that affected the trains as well. And two significant incidences I want to draw your attention to occurred in 1902 and 1906. These were the incidences that prompted the discussion to move the train line. In 1902, the train heading towards Melbourne crossed the Haunted Hills. As it was coming down the western slope, two carriages derailed, sending them somersaulting and its cargo flying. Thankfully, this was the cargo containers and there was no loss of life. In 1906, the morning train headed for Morwell had the primary driver fall off at Warrigal. He wasn't able to return to the train and was replaced. When this train came down the eastern slope at Morwell, it derailed and dropped 60 yards into the Morwell River. In Digging Up People for Coal, A History of Your Lawn by Meredith Fletcher, she quoted Curtis Wilson from the Sun News Pictorial, who said in regards to the train line and power industry for the Latrobe Valley, "The days of dread have passed. Modern machinery and science will break the spell of the Haunted Hills and lay the ghosts to rest." Well, he obviously had not heard from a young man who visited the Lawn Cemetery, located in the Haunted Hills, on the road named the same. He visited at dusk, parked his car on the flat driveway at the first row of graves. Walking through the cemetery, soaking up the atmosphere, and trying to find some ghosts, only to return disappointed until he realized his locked vehicle with the handbrake engaged was at the second row of graves. He had not seen the paranormal force move it. There were no skid marks, on the road at least. Oops, getting ahead of myself to the ghost stories already. But there is more to tell later. Suffice to say, he left the cemetery in a hurry. The Haunted Hills road was so steep and challenging, even in a motor vehicle, people regularly complained about the conditions of the road. Some people would also write about it in their non-ghostly experiences and describe the area. There were so many car accidents. In fact, the only year they didn't have a car accident was the year the road was closed for nearly 8 months. This was 1936. However, one of the most remarkable accidents occurred in 1931, where a vehicle heading towards Your Lawn through the Haunted Hills, the driver lost control. The car flipped and somersaulted, coming to an abrupt stop when the fence post impaled the engine. The car caught on fire, perfect conditions of heat and fuel. Passing motorists, alarmed, stopped to help. They were astonished when they couldn't find the driver. There were no remains in the car. The manner of the damage had them questioning if anyone could have extracted themselves from the vehicle as it was. It did not look like anyone had removed a person from the car. However, hours later, the driver ambled into the Your Lawn police station to report the accident. Suffice to say, this was not the first report the police had received about the car on fire in the Haunted Hills. He never did say how he escaped unharmed to walk into town. Maybe the angels intervened. A creature lurked in the hills of the haunted. It had been spotted by many a reliable source, hunters, farmers, and one poor man whose car had blown a tire. Looked up, startled to see the Gippsland Lion staring back at him. Lucky he was finishing up and was able to drive away, not getting the full experience the sheep around the place were so accustomed to. The sheep were being found mutilated, destroyed. It was estimated hundreds went missing or were killed. Hunting parties set off, and journalists and photographers set out to find the stealthy lion. It was far more cunning than any hunter and was never caught. These sightings, for our local history buffs, were in 1915 and 1916, which was well before the rumours of an American soldier bringing two pet panthers to Gippsland, rumoured to have escaped, which have been sighted ever since. Ever since the Haunted Hills were named, people have been trying to find a corporeal reason for it. One of the reasons is that criminals sent rumours or even caused the haunting symptoms to keep good folks out, protecting their businesses or criminal enterprises, preventing the public from stumbling across a distillery or coin press. Let's investigate this by meeting the criminals of the Haunted Hills. Bootleggers are like rogue traders. These are people who ranged from distillers to people who sold alcohol on without a license. There were also laws around about how much alcohol you could have in your home. More than 38 bottles, just over a slab, would have had you imprisoned. Well, imprisoned? Fined? Hung? I'm not sure. They say stills were set up in the Haunted Hills. One was found discarded and in disrepair many years later, but none were ever found in action. A sly grog trader, Richard, had a visit from the police, who said, "I believe you are trafficking in liquor." Richard replied, "Yes, I'm doing a bit." The police searched the property, as he had a warrant to do so. He found a case containing 18 bottles of beer. 18 bottles of beer on the wall, 18 bottles of beer, take one down, pass it around, 17, sorry. The police officer asked, "Where was the rest?" Richard said, "There isn't any more in the house, and if you find any more bottles, I'll give you £50. The policeman was undeterred by Richard's bravado and went on to find 21 more bottles. Some were under clothes and another in a pram. Police magistrate Mr. Noonan was the person who heard this case. Richard did not show up to court on the 18th of October 1934. All 39 bottles were forfeited to the police, who had permission through a license to sell them. There was no further penalty assigned by police magistrate Noonan to Richard. 2 years later, Richard caught the attention of the police again. At the Blazing Stump in the Haunted Hills. I just want to pause. The name is so awesome. At the Blazing Stump in the Haunted Hills. Today it's a little terrifying, especially with the ferocity of the fires we've had of late. But for the times, it's a cute name. And I really don't know where it is, because the Haunted Hills is no longer signed as a township. A policeman from Bairnsdale was involved in the sting to catch him. This policeman, over an hour, bought 5 bottles of beer from Richard for 2 shillings per bottle. At about 1 a.m, the Bairnsdale policeman returned with the first constable, Howard, from the Yallourn police station, walking along Bourke Street, Haunted Hills, where they encountered Richard sitting on 2 bags. Can't imagine it was a comfortable seat, as the bags between them contained 29 bottles of beer. They didn't say it was in a crate. Maybe that's why he answered so testily, finally pinned down that he had sold liquor without a license. "Others were selling it beside me. Why pick me? I'm always the mug." In Australia at this time, he was suggesting by saying mug, he was a gullible person. His defense lawyer said that the bills were not marked by the police to prove the sale had occurred, and that the defense was wearing a dark coat and the moonlight was not strong, but the moonshine was. On 26 May 1936, police magistrate Mr. Thompson upheld the conviction of sly grog trading and imposed a fine of £25 plus court costs of more than £3, and the 29 bottles of beer were kept by the police to sell on, taken down, pass it around. During a temperance debate written by a letter to the editor in 1938, it was estimated 9,000 people were directly employed in the alcohol industry, including distilling and brewing. Many of these were the people who were selling beer. It appears there was no shortage of beer or liquor if one wanted to indulge, so there seems to have been a lack of demand for moonshine operations. And the police were super vigilant at patrolling the Haunted Hills, finding people who were illegally selling alcohol. Even one of our very highly esteemed township members got caught because they were a little unclear on the rules and bought alcohol which they sold on to people, and they thought they were doing the service, but they did not have a license. So they were very vigilant. So it would seem odd that a distilling operation would have been missed by the police. The next charge is that counterfeiters and coin makers also had reason to keep the public out of the hills. A barking dog in the Haunted Hills alerted the police to the presence of a coin plant used by coin counterfeiters. It was discovered at 7 a.m. on the 15th of July 1920 at the foot of the Haunted Hills, 3 miles from Moe and 1.5 miles north of the main Gippsland line. Two police constables met the 67-year-old owner of the shanty and asked him if he was making coins. Henry Herold said, "Have a look around." Detective Bell and Constantine T.C. Gunn did just that and found 20 moulds, a sheet of lead, a ladle, 6 moulds of metal, cyanide of potassium, and 2 moulds which contained coins with shillings in them. Henry admitted he was making 2 and 1 cent shilling. However, none of the pieces had worked and he had to destroy them. He also lamented he was never given a fighting chance as his tools were always confiscated from him. This complaint might have led the police to investigate a little deeper about the man they found in the Haunted Hills, who was not a local to the area. It didn't take them too long to find out about Pryor's. Just 3 years prior, he'd been sentenced to 3 years imprisonment, however, was released early for good behaviour, and had 2 prior charges in New South Wales. Well, those are the ones they found. A chemist and station master were witnesses for the prosecution. The judge asked Henry why he was back at it again. He informed he was in the autumn of his life and couldn't find light work. He used the term yellow leaf. Henry stated if he received a harsh sentence, "I would only be a burden to the community." He also claimed, "I did no harm, as I was found before I was ready. Although I do admit, intent was there." At the Warrigal Session Court, Judge Morrill sentenced Henry Holroyd to 5 years back at Pentridge Jail for the possession of tools to counterfeit. There is so much more to Henry Holroyd's story. He really was a masterful coin counterfeiter. His entire story has been released to the Patreon's only feed in the $5 tier and above. Maybe offensive behaviour is what people are referring to that kept the good folks out of the Haunted Hills. In 1935, Haunted Hills Hall held a dance competition with the local. Sidney Newton attended with a male dance partner. During the Monte Carlo, it was believed he and his partner won the dance. However, it was awarded to another couple, a one of each couple. He argued and said that he believed he and his partner had danced much better than the other couples on the floor. This resulted in a little bit of an affray where he was punched by other members on the dance floor. He punched back and a general fight broke out with other people piling on. Sydney was charged with offensive behaviour. He had a previous offence of assault. Before Messrs. G. Watson and J. Bolger, Sydney was imposed a sentence of 10 shillings and 5 shillings for court costs. Maybe the Haunted Hills was filled with thieves and delinquents. Denzel Black, a truck driver who lived in the Haunted Hills from at least 1931 until 1943, had seen a truck on an abandoned lot near Tyers Street, Yalon. He purchased parts for it, fixed it, and finally moved it to his property. This was over the course of about 9 months. Richard John Lumley gave evidence that after he built 15 houses in Tyers Street, Yalon in 1938, he expected more work in the area. He had left a concrete mixer connected to the engine and had bolted it down. The police found Denzel and the engine at his property. On July 6, 1939, the case went to court. Denzel was charged with larceny. The jury found him not guilty. The judge asked them to consider the charge of receiving stolen goods, to which he was found guilty, and the jury suggested he should return the engine. The judge overruled them and said the two men would need to work this out as Denzel had improved the engine. Earlier in 1913, a young man, William Robinson, who worked as a farm labourer, came across a car which had broken down in the Haunted Hills. While Mr. Hopkins, a merchant from Sale, his wife and sister walked into Maui to find a mechanic, William took two of the driving lamps, a cushion, spanners, and other things belonging to Mr. Hopkins. William pled guilty. His lawyer informed the court his parents were highly respected members of the community and he was raised well. The First Offenders Act was an option to judges during this time in Victoria. It allowed judges to use their discretion, which could include making an under-the-ticket record or reducing mandatory sentences for certain classes of offences, and this was one of them. On the 22nd of May 1913, at the Maui Court of Petty Sessions, before Police Magistrate Mr. W.W. Harris, he said, "I would have expected better for someone raised in the situation Mr. Robinson was. I would expect a young man like Mr. Robinson to protect, not take advantage, and felt that discretion and leniency would do more harm than good. For the charge of larceny, I impose a fine of £10, which if not paid would default to 2 months' imprisonment." Court costs were also charged. The defendant immediately paid the fine and costs. So do we really think the criminals of the Haunted Hills worked so hard on haunting the hill? Did they have the wherewithal? How did they do it? Now, during the podcast so far, I've shared some of the ghost story. Now I'll tell it in its entirety. To the south of Yalon lies a region known as the Haunted Hills. It was named rightly so, by the experience of many a stockman. Even before the stockmen drove their cattle from East Gippsland to Melbourne, before these names were imagined, the Gunai Kurnai people lived in these parts. While they hunted and gathered food on the Haunted Hills, they didn't set up camp or go on them after dark. They believed the Haunted Hills to be possessed by spirits. They heard rumblings. The ground groaned, so it housed a creature lurking beneath that could quickly snatch them away. There was a yellow native hops suitable for treating fevers. The other variety of native hops was Dodonia viscosus, a known hallucinogen if ingested in the right dose. When it bloomed, it turned the hills blood red. Wombat, kangaroos, and snake were able to live in harmony with the spirits that haunted the ground beneath their feet. This was a completely different story for horses, cows, and sheep. Before the train line was put in and the stockmen drove their cattle from East Gippsland to Melbourne, the journey was long. The animals would walk up the eastern slopes with no hassles. However, they would hit the western slope, startle and stampede. Many a cow wasn't recovered after this misadventure. Drovers would not camp on the hills because the cows would not stay. Some drovers said it was wallabies or kangaroos startling the cattle. However, it was only at this point of the trip. Sure. As if Australian cattle were so unsettled by kangaroos they bolted so far and furiously. They were not often recovered. Another time, a herd of stampeding cows nearly took out the wooden structures making up the settlement of Maui. The sound of phantom cattle stampeding are heard throughout the Haunted Hills if you can sit quietly long enough. The cows don't stay on the western slopes of the hills. Even today, numerous people who live in the Haunted Hills have heard this sound. A man was out in the haunted hills when he saw bullocks and a man on horseback approaching. It was only as they drew nearer he noticed the opaque quality to the entourage. Shortly after this, the phantom cattle and their stockmen disappeared. Many drivers on the busy Prince's Highway have had a ghostly experience by the time they reached the haunted hills. One of the apparitions in the haunted hills you might see is a man in a flannelette shirt and work pants. This man is sometimes seen by people driving past on the Haunted Hills Road or Prince's Highway. He seems happy just to be seen, to be recognised, acknowledged. He may be the man who was buried in a grave on the north side of the Gippsland Line. The grave was last seen around 1872, before the line went through. In 1907, a celestial event over the Haunted Hills threw the nearby communities into panic. A red glory was in the sky. Was it a comet? Dunno. It gave the townsfolk flashbacks to Sunday school and Bible verses they'd heard as children came to haunt them. Was this the blood red moon? The beginning of the end? Well, it didn't turn out to be the end. It certainly cemented the legend of the haunted hills. Other balls of light have been seen by local ghost hunters at the T intersection of Haunted Hills Road and Bill Schultz Road. Not far from the cemetery, technology appears to fail frequently in the vicinity of the haunted hills. In the early days of radio, Gippsland had a particularly noticeable dropout in reception in the big regional town of Sale. It was the worst place for listening to the wireless, as it frequently dropped out at night time. The Australian Broadcasting Authority sent out some men to investigate. They said the haunted hills may be responsible for this drop in radio waves. This is very interesting. As ghost lore says, spirits feed off activity and energy, whether that's emotional, physical, or even radio. Could the spirits have been absorbing the radio waves to continue their movement when other sources of energy were low? You could say there's a science behind this idea. Actually, you could say it's physics with the law of the conservation of energy. That is, the energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can change form. Now, who didn't think physics was going to be useful in life? Even today, reception in your radio can crackle, become staticky, or even drop out in the haunted hills. And your mobile phone may not work. Many people have reception issues in the haunted hills. A distressed woman is sometimes seen running across the road, asking drivers to stop. For a long time, people had seen her believed she'd died in a car accident. However, while there were lots of car accidents on Haunted Hills Road, there were few fatalities here. It's more likely this woman is a mother, wife, and a woman who stayed during the 1944 bushfire, defending her home, a home she never left, a home she's still defending and asking for your help today. Earlier, I told you the Haunted Hills had a name change along the way to what it's known as today, Herne's Oak. Which sounds less ominous, right? I don't know. You tell me. Herne's Oak is taken from Shakespeare's play The Merry Wives of Windsor, where Mrs. Page says to Eva, "There is an old tale that goes, Herne the hunter, sometimes a keeper here in Windsor Forest, doth all the winter time at still midnight walk around about an oak with great ragged horns, and there he blasts the tree and takes the cattle and makes milch keen your blood, and shakes a chain in the most hideous and dreadful manner. You've heard of such a spirit. He is Herne the Hunter." The name for Herne's Oak. Milch keen yield blood is that milking cows give blood. It's German. Nobody's milked cows on the Haunted Hills. So maybe that's why they don't. Maybe the terror causes the cows so much stress it gives them blood in their milk. Ugh. And I did my research thoroughly. I looked at geographical survey maps. I even spoke to a local geologist. While there is coal beneath the topsoil, it has not been burnt out and has similar composition to all the other hills in the Latrobe Valley, which have coal seams beneath them, however do not report the haunting symptoms. There is no geological explanation for the rumbling or stampeding noise. Residents usually hear today during daylight savings when they're out in their backyards. and it's quiet. They know the difference between the train and the reverberation of phantom animals running past. One of the residents I spoke to had followed the sound and seen dust being kicked up along the road. In a minute, I'm going to nerd out on the geological composition of the Haunted Hills because I really need to put this to bed. So before I go for broke, and if you're not into geology, I know Sheldon hates it, you can go. But before you do, I want to say thank you so much for your time and your ears. I'm glad they're still attached to your head. I hope you've had a fascinating journey through the Haunted Hills, wherever you are. This was produced, researched, written, and narrated by me, Tegan Dawson, on Gunai Kurnai Land in Moi, Victoria. Sound engineering by Aaron Austin Music. Next time on Haunted Hills, we'll be telling the history of the Brown Coal Mine. A quick reminder, Patreons in the $5 and above tier already have a second podcast dropped all about Henry Holroyd, the coin counterfeiter we heard about in this podcast. You can follow us for more small towns, big stories on the socials, Facebook, Haunted Hills Pod, Twitter at haunt_hills, or on our pod website, hauntedhills.com.au. Thank you again. Have a fabulous day. Now, back to my nerding out, and to all those who think they want to nerd out with me, thank you, and here goes. That might be the last breath I take for a while. 3, 2, 1. Now back to my nerding out, and to all those who think they want to nerd out with me, thanks, and here goes. That might be the last breath I take for a while. I really need to put it to bed, because I keep being told about underground rivers and caves beneath the Haunted Hills. I've looked, and nobody can show me these. There are images on hauntedhills.com.au which show where the coal lies and areas which would be utilised. The caves would likely result in sinkholes, as the brown coal is not a dense substance. It has a high moisture content and would not support upholding a structure. The moisture content is one of the reasons that has stopped the export from these mines: the Brown Coal Mine, Yallourn Mine, and Hazelwood Mine. Yallourn, Yallourn North, Morwell, and yes, even Tarogan. For non-locals, Tarogan is a town which people speak better of, which may or may not be justified. We'll get there. But one thing I will say is I conducted a ghost tour of Tarogan, and it was not what the Tarogan locals thought of their town. So they gave me 3 stars and said it's the back alley tour of the town. Which I love, because that's exactly what it was anyway. But my point is, they would not expect viable coal resources to lie in wait beneath their feet. The state government recreated the coal digitally as a 3D model, which doesn't mean a lot to me, except that they would have mentioned if there were caves, underground rivers, and other things that set the Haunted Hills wildly apart from the rest of the area. The Haunted Hills formation was the last to be created. However, they seem to have been here for as long as the Gunai Kurnai people have been here. So we can say about 80,000 years, or older. The Bratulong mob were the custodians of the land south of the Latrobe River, which includes the Strzelecki's and the Haunted Hills, while the Bryakalong mob occupied land to the north, including Harmony Hills, and the other side of Lake Narrakan, which used to be a part of the Latrobe River, and would have been a meeting place for the mobs. The people had a valuable supply of silkreet from the quarries in the Haunted Hills, using them to make tools. They were well established here, as the resources did not force them to pack up and move far at all. The river teemed with life, eels and native fish. Brown coal has been a major factor in the industrialization of the Latrobe Valley, due to the vast resources. There were no alternative plans made, and it takes a while to shift policy without clear direction, which up until recently, there hasn't been a desire to. Because when they started investigating the brown coal in the Latrobe Valley, they estimated there was 300 years worth of coal. Granted, back then the technology was much slower. However, there is billions of tons of coal in the Gippsland Basin. So the coal from the Haunted Hills flows from the Yallourn seam. It's all one seam. This is why there's been very intensive modelling, beginning with the State Electrical Commission in Victoria, continued by companies which bought the power stations undertaken by the Victorian government. One of their models about organizing for the digital 3D model. It says, the Latrobe Valley Depression in the Gippsland Basin, one of the world's premier coal and petroleum basins. The depression is a late element in the Cretaceous Cainozoic Rift Basin. Rift fill sandstone of the lower to middle Cretaceous Strzelecki group and Paleozoic rock underlie the crop out and around the Latrobe Valley Depression. The South Gippsland Highlands were initiated during a shortening of these rocks in the middle Cretaceous. Rifting recommenced in the late Cretaceous, formed the Latrobe Valley Depression, and swamps also filled with organic material during the Oligocene to Miocene eras. The Tarelgan Morwell and Yalom formations. There was a great thickness and uniformity of many of the coal seams over large areas. It's consistent with slow and steady rates of subsidence in the depression. Basin inversion that commenced towards the end of the Miocene reactivated basin growth faults in the Strzelecki group. These reverse faults do not persist into the poorly consolidated Tarelgan, Morwell, and Yalom formations and form myoclines and folds. Erosion that peneplained the Tarelgan, Morwell, and Yalom formations was followed in the Pleistocene by deposition of a veneer of gravel, sand, and clay, the Haunted Hill Formation, by Glow and Holgate, 1991. Faults in the Strzelecki basement appear to be reflected in the overlaying. All right, so the faults in the Strzelecki group are discussing monocline, or rarely a monoform, which is a step-like fold in the rock strata consisting of a zone of a steeper dip within an otherwise horizontal or gently dipping sequence. A faulty monocline is a fracture. This is what is called a fault. Sudden motions along the faults cause the rocks to break and move suddenly, releasing the stored up stress and energy, creating an earthquake. A slip is the distance rocks move along the fault and can be up or down the fault plane. So there's a lot to go through, but essentially the Haunted Hills formation is the entire area, including the Yalom seam. The typical characteristics of the brown coal found here has energy between 5.8 to 11.5 megajoules per kilogram, an overburden thickness of 10 to 20 meters, water 48 to 70%, carbon 65 to 70%, oxygen 25 to 30%, hydrogen 4 to 5%, less than 4% ash, less than 1% nitrogen, and less than 1% sulfur. So more than 80% of Victoria's resources of coal are located in the Gippsland Basin, southeastern Victoria, with seams in the Latrobe Valley region containing an estimate measured resource of 65 billion tons. Approximately half of this has been identified as potentially economic. There is also a graph on the website that shows Australia's Latrobe Valley resource of coal being one of the highest in the world in the smallest amount of ash content. And Megapolis in Greece also has a very wet brown coal. Again, thank you for listening and coming on this journey with me. And really, this time, I'm gonna go. Have a fabulous day, or sleep for all the insomniacs I've lulled to sleep.